From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, it's almost here, Election Day, along with what appears to be a tight battle for president nationally. There are races for the Illinois General Assembly and Congress, and even a few ballot measures here in Illinois that voters will decide. We will talk about the election and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie has also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And we have with us this week, good to have back, Patrick Fingston. He is the morning show host at WMAY Radio in Springfield. He also writes the Illinois Political Newsletter. Patrick, great to have you back with us.
Sean, Charlie, a pleasure.
So, Patrick, let's just start with the thing that's on probably most people's minds, I would think, the race for president. It is tight from all the polling that we've seen. And Donald Trump versus Kamala Harris, all of the campaigning, the ads, it's all coming down to this. As someone who has covered politics, even worked in the political arena before, how do you see this thing shaping up in the final few days?
I thought you were talking about, like, high school football playoffs were the things on everyone's mind. What election are you talking about? I think there are two different schools of thoughts here. There's the national perspective of the presidential race and the horse race that people are covering and fighting about and how desperately close it is. Then there's the races in Illinois and the huge cash disparity, the well-documented struggles of the Republican Party in the state, the absolutely like gratuitous Democratic gerrymandering that has made so many uncompetitive legislative races around the state. So it's really two different sides of the same coin.
I would think if you're running one of these races for, say, the General Assembly especially, but even Congress in Illinois, it's difficult right now if you're on the Republican side because Donald Trump's message may not be resonating with everybody. It depends on the part of the state you're in, the district you're in, but may not be resonating with everyone. And you're trying to get enthusiasm for people to come out and vote. And from everything we've seen in recent years and most likely this year, Democrats will take the presidential candidate, will take Illinois rather handily. So how do you get people to get excited if you're in one of these, say, suburban districts or somewhere else and trying to get people to come out and vote for your candidate?
Well, that's the problem. You've got like three different states, right? That you've got, you know, the city, which is the city, of course, but the suburbs have just completely abandoned Republicans because of Donald Trump. He's so toxic there. His numbers are so bad. It has absolutely just handicapped legislative races from everywhere, from the South suburbs in Joliet all the way to the Wisconsin line. It has made it harder for candidate recruitment. It has made it harder for candidates at the door. It's just an uphill battle that they're facing each and every day. Downstate is a mix because you've got these districts that were drawn and carved into the red counties downstate where Democrats tried to pick out enough Democratic voters that they can sneak away another downstate seat. I think Sharon Chung's district between Bloomington and Peoria is a great example of that, where they left all the Republican voters around and kind of created a dumbbell between Peoria and Bloomington, and the issues play differently there than they do, you know, 5 miles outside of Bloomington, for example. And then Southern Illinois is may as well be Alabama politically at this point. And it shows everywhere from metropolis to the Metro East. And even the Metro East is trending more toward Republicans, even though it's a suburb. It doesn't at all act like the suburbs of Chicago, where Republicans are doing better. They may not knock off some of the well-funded, more funded Democrats in the legislature this year, but it's certainly an area of the state that's moving toward Republicans, which is the complete opposite of the Chicago suburbs.
Yeah, Charlie, I used to tell people that there were, you know, a couple of different types of Democrats. There were your city Democrats, like Patrick's talking about being in Chicago, maybe even suburban in some cases, might be a little more on the left. But you get downstate, it was often hard to tell Democrats and Republicans apart. And they usually work pretty well together in, say, the General Assembly, where they often had the same needs in each district. They would work to try to bring jobs, bring different projects to the areas. So things have changed a lot.
Yeah, and I think a couple of factors. One of the things that, and Sean, you're being in a better position to judge that than I, but it strikes me that the Democrats back in my day in Southern Illinois represented people who were active in manufacturing, workers, coal mines, and the coal mining has pretty much gone away. And I think there have been a lot of manufacturing plants that have closed down. And so the demographic makeup is more small business owners, rural farmers, folks like that, who tend to be a lot more conservative. And there are people who are drawn to Donald Trump's message. As a matter of fact, I went through the list that the Board of Elections puts out about what all the contests are in each legislative district. And I found out that there are 24 Republican districts where there's no Democratic challenger. And 19 of those are south of Springfield. And so I would say from central Illinois on down to the Ohio River, the only place you're going to find Democrats, as Patrick suggested, the Metro East still is more or less Democratic. And some of the urban areas around Peoria and that district around Peoria and Bloomington. Here in Springfield, there's a district like that over in Champaign. And had the map been drawn, what would you say, by some geographer who had no knowledge of partisan politics?
Fairly would be a good word. Fairly.
Yeah. And if it was based more on geometry than politics, you would not have this imbalance. Although I have to point out that having a disadvantage in redistricting does not necessarily mean that you can't win a majority in the General Assembly. The Democrats were at the mercy of a Republican-drawn map in the 90s, and they still won 4 out of 5 of the elections for the state house and had a majority in the state house for 4 out of the 5 elections under a gerrymandered Republican map. So you can do it, but you need money and you need good candidates. And I think one of the things that works against the Republicans, that if I'm a Republican in the suburbs and I'm thinking, do I want to, and if I'm a moderate Republican or a conservative Republican fiscally, but socially more moderate, somebody in the mold of a Jim Thompson or a Jim Edgar, do I want to get into it with the toxicity of the National Republican Party? No. So it makes it hard to recruit candidates. And you also, in the suburbs, you have the demographic changes. And I think one of the big factors that I sense going on in the suburbs, particularly among women, is that after the Dobbs decision, they have been energized. A lot of women who maybe didn't care one way or the other, and now they are very much interested in voting to preserve reproductive rights.
Yeah, Patrick, how much do you think abortion, an issue that really hasn't hit people in Illinois the way it has maybe in some other states after that decision, but how do you think that's playing into the election, not just at the national level, but here in Illinois?
Well, if you look at polling, the issue is not at the top of the list. The core issue when prompted directly by voters is the economy and cost of living. It's when you look at focus groups and get inside the actual conversations, when abortion is presented to people, that it really starts to garner more emotional responses from voters, obviously specifically women voters, which is part of the reason for the gender gap in this campaign. That's why you see Illinois Democrats working overtime to try and make abortion an issue in every campaign. They're trying to put that issue into voters' heads and make them have a visceral reaction to it, even to the point of in more than a couple of cases in legislative races around the state, you're seeing Democrats sort of make up their Republican opponents' positions, and the Republicans can't do anything to rebut it because there's no money to do so. I mean, if you look, there's a case in the suburbs where Dennis Reboletti, who's a former state representative, who's running to come back to the legislature, he's being attacked as an anti-abortion extremist, even though he's come out almost fully pro-choice, because he gave money to his friend and former House colleague Mike Bost in the spring primary when Bost was running against Darren Bailey in a primary for Congress. So Democrats use that contribution from Reboletti to Bost and say, well, because you gave money to Bost, you support no abortion ever, and you're an extremist. And that's the toxicity of our elections that I really just hate.
Yeah, Charlie, that wasn't always the case either. I don't want to say that everything, especially I look at it from the Illinois perspective, but it wasn't always, a big tent necessarily that everybody was welcome in every, no matter what their positions were, but there was a lot more room to disagree.
Yeah, and I remember the experience of sitting there in the Illinois House watching the debate on the floor. And this was, oh Lord, this would have been 50 years ago is when I first started. And I remember one particular day, it was a very fiery debate, and the Republican, I forget who it was, and the Democrat were going at each other hammer and tongs. And afterwards, I was commenting to a Republican lawmaker from Chicago, a guy named Artie Telser. And I said, man, those people are going to kill each other. And he said, no, it's all showbiz. And sure enough, a couple of days later, I was out to dinner, and here these two guys are, and they're at a table, and they're yucking it up, and like the best of friends. Sort of like, if you will, somebody on the basketball court, and again, I'm dating myself, but you have like Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan. They went at each other very hard when they were playing, but off the court, they were friends. And that was the way it was. Now, there were a few outliers, people who were just obnoxious and weren't particularly cared for either by the other party or by their own party. But by and large, it was a place where there was rhetoric, but there was also the bottom line belief that we have to work together to try and solve these mutual problems. And I don't sense that anymore. And in the legislature, the fact that Democrats have such an overwhelming majority, and my guess is that they're going to add to it in the House, that there's really not any need for them to pay particular attention to concerns of Republicans.
Yeah, Patrick, I have been following the different things people have said about the Illinois legislature and how the especially in the House, that there was thought at least early on, and this is back, I think, when Joe Biden was still the nominee, likely nominee for president for the Democrats, that the Republicans would pick up seats, cut into that super majority of the Democrats. Then I've heard now Democrats saying, we think we can actually pick up additional seats. So, you know, from your point of view, you follow this pretty closely. What are you seeing out there?
I've had Democrats consistently picking up seats since I think my first reading was last year. So the map and the money have always been on Democrat side. There are 7 House Republicans who represent districts that Biden won in 2020. So it's always been an uphill battle for Republicans. Add the giant cash disadvantage, not putting Biden on the ballot in the fall, I think has probably helped Democrats, specifically in the suburbs, because it's brought a renewed enthusiasm to the base. There may be 1 or 2 districts where it hasn't helped as much, where it's a little more blue collar, a little more centrist, and Harris is being perceived by some as that maybe more progressive, like she presented herself in 2019 than she is in 2024, where she's essentially running as a pretty moderate center left candidate. The reality here is that Republicans have had their backs against the wall this entire campaign, and have not raised enough money to compete, have not run particularly great campaigns message wise. Everyone sees cost of living is the number one issue, and Republicans cannot find a message that seems to stick on cost of living. They end up just going back to those GOP traditional talking points of taxes and corruption and Madigan, and they don't get anywhere with voters. And I, my guess is still probably somewhere between three and four seats for Democrats to pick up next Tuesday.
And I assume the same thing with Congress, and we talked about redistricting. Certainly that comes into play in these congressional districts, but it seems as though there's only one district that may even truly be in play at this point, and that may not even be that close.
You say redistricting, I say gerrymandering, because it was clearly drawn in a way to elect 14 Democrats and three Republicans in all safe seats, or as safe as they can make them, when Democrats drew the new map in 2022. The only district that might be in play is the 17th Congressional District, which is the northwest part of the state, kind of cherry picks areas in Bloomington Normal, Peoria, the Quad Cities, and Rockford. It's the old Sherry Bustos district, but it's kind of been amped up a little bit more for Democrats. When Bustos ran in 2020 in the old district, Trump actually won that district. Under the new lines, he wouldn't have. Under the new lines, it was a Biden plus. The Democrat who won that seat 2 years ago, Eric Sorensen, who's a former TV weatherman, has drawn criticism from both the left and right for either not being particularly engaged in the district or talking about local issues, or from the right for being way socially progressive for a pretty blue collar district. The Republican candidate in that race is a former Winnebago County judge. Joe McGraw is his name. He's close friends with Dave Severson, the longtime state senator that many folks around here would at least know of. He has been, I had a story on this a couple of weeks ago on in the newsletter, the Illinois newsletter, that Republicans were concerned that they were blowing this race because McGraw was not talking about cost of living. He was running a wholly immigration and crime campaign. I actually had one Republican strategist text me after McGraw's either first or second ad came out and said, if I had a dime for every time Joe McGraw talked about cost of living, I'd still have no money.
Well, let me move to some ballot measures that are out there. We've talked about one, Charlie, before, and that is what some are calling a millionaire tax. It's an advisory referendum, and it would put a tax surcharge on people who make a certain amount of money. And the thought with this is the additional proceeds would go toward property tax relief. Charlie, do you think this has a chance of getting passed?
Yeah, I would be very surprised if it doesn't get passed, because what it says, basically, the question asks, should the Illinois Constitution be amended to create an additional 3% tax on income greater than $1 million for the purpose of dedicating funds raised to property tax relief? I'm guessing a lot of people are going to vote for that. I think it was 10 years ago, there was a similar measure, advisory question, asking if the there should be an additional tax on income over $1 million, and more than 3 million voters opted to vote on that particular question, and it passed 64-36. But then a couple years later, when there was a legislation to actually change the Illinois Constitution to allow a graduated income tax, under which presumably higher incomes would be taxed at a higher level, that was soundly defeated. It would have required a three-fifths vote to be adopted, three-fifths approval vote, and it had only 47% voting for it, 53% voted against it. And so it really crashed. So I'm guessing that this advisory referendum will pass. The issue will be for the General Assembly, and I'm not sure that there would even be the votes to actually put an amendment on for the next election, which is the first time you could do it. And I'm thinking if they were to do it, they would probably also have enabling legislation, a law that would go into effect if the amendment was approved, saying the proceeds will be used to reduce property taxes. Now, how you would do that, I'm not really sure. You could probably say, we're going to send this money to schools and local governments, dollar for dollar, if they abate their property tax levy. Or you might say, okay, we will give you a property taxpayers on your income tax. We will allow you to deduct from your taxable income the amount of money you pay for property taxes. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how it would work. As I say, the proposition is probably going to pass, and then the difficulties will be in how do we actually change this voter sentiment into law.
Well, I want to also mention another set of some ballot measures that are out there, and these are more in the southwest part of the state. So I do want to get to a couple other items, but real quick, Patrick, your thoughts on these. These would basically have, they're advisory questions again, but basically saying should these counties, like Madison County, should it secede from the state, basically getting away from Chicago? That's sort of what they're actually talking about. Your thoughts on that?
Well, really quick, just on the tax question, let's remind our listeners that these advisory referenda have no effect of law, which is important here. It's not actually changing our tax code. It's giving the legislature political cover to put a constitutional measure on the ballot in 2 years, or in 4 years potentially, which may make more sense for them. This was more of just cover for Democrats to fill the three advisory slots on the top of the ballot with issues that are good for them, so that they could block outside efforts like former Rep. Jeannie Ives wanted to do, like a parents' rights advisory question, and Democrats would rather have those issues that were positive for them. There will certainly be a push among Democrats to amend the Constitution at some point. I think as you see them run into revenue issues, or at least spending issues in the next couple of years, you'll probably see an additional push on that from progressives. The question is, does J.B. Pritzker want to move more tax increase issues into the ether, especially if Donald Trump wins and Pritzker wants to point himself in a position for running for president potentially in 2028. On the secession things, these are so stupid. The first of all, it's illegal for a county to secede from the state. There's no mechanism in state or federal law to allow it to happen. These are right wing, annoying, pointless issues that never actually matter in trying to make the lives of the voters that these people represent better. And I wish Republicans were more focused on issues that matter than stupid stuff like trying to tear our state apart.
Real quick here, and I want to get both of your responses, but keep them kind of short if you could, so we can kind of wrap up here. But the newspaper endorsements, I wanted to talk about that. That has gotten some national attention. Both of you, are following what newspapers have to say and have been able to say through the years. But both, we've seen some major newspapers, Washington Post, the LA Times, have pulled back on giving endorsements. That's created a lot of controversy. Patrick, do you think it really matters in the end?
There are zero undecided voters in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina that are deciding who they're going to vote for because of the Washington Post editorial page. The more concerning thing is why someone like Jeff Bezos would engage himself in the editorial process to pull the plug on this, which is clearly more aligned with the attacks he sustained from Trump in the last 9 years over Amazon and the contracts that it has with the U.S. Postal Service, and Trump, of course, with his world of grievances, who says, the Washington Post is mean to me, so Bezos is a bad guy. But he also has, Bezos has this Blue Origin company that is trying to get some more federal contracts. So is he prematurely bowing to Trump? That's the real concern.
Charlie is a longtime newspaper man. I guess your thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, I would agree with what Patrick said. I think both in the case of the Washington Post and the LA Times, it's basically the owners coming in and telling the editorial board who'd done the vetting and had the, from what I read, had the editorials just about written, saying, no, we're not going to run them. And I think it was basically cowardice on the part of the owners. They were afraid. They didn't want to aggravate Trump, fearful that should Trump win, he would take it out on him, maybe try and put him in prison. Mm. And on the other hand, I'd also say I can't imagine anybody who's going to make up their mind who to vote for president based on what some newspaper editorial board would recommend. The one area that I think is important, though, I think newspapers need to provide information, maybe endorsements for some of the lower level races, particularly things like school board, county board, ones that don't get much attention and voters may not have much information about. So I think there's a service there in the paper saying, well, here's Charlie Wheeler and Patrick Finkston running for this particular office. And we've spoken to them both. We know what their positions are. And we think Finkston is a much better choice.
Darn right. I think it's also worth mentioning, Sean, that the State Journal Register essentially has no more editorial board, no more opinion writers locally, and are not weighing in on any local elections in this cycle.
Patrick, let's go to you for our notes from the field.
This from my newsletter this morning from the Illinois. In the final 2 weeks of the political campaign, the disparity in money between Republicans and Democrats has been even more clear. In the final 2 weeks of this campaign on Chicago broadcast television, so this is four or five stations, for four House Democratic candidates, they're spending $2.8 million to run over 3,900 ads on Chicago broadcast TV. In comparison, House Republicans are running zero. If these suburban races were close, this overwhelming disparity in messaging, in money, in attacks, and many of these are attack ads, are maybe enough to get Democrats across the line in some of these close races. It's not just the Chicago suburbs. Democrats are essentially unchecked in the Metro East as well, where they're running ads for LaToya Greenwood on St. Louis broadcast TV, and Republicans are not responding on broadcast TV there either.
Okay, and Shirley.
Well, this is a note from the field about a different kind of an election that's coming up. The contest to redesign the Illinois flag drew 4,844 entries during the six-week submission period that ended a couple weeks ago. Secretary of State Alexei Janulius announced this week. And Janulius said, quote, "I'm thrilled by the number of submissions the commission has received, as well as the excitement that this project has generated. I can't wait to see which designs the commission selects for public voting." And the commission he's referring to is a special flag commission that was created by legislation passed last year. And the commission oversees the voting process. And the commission will review the designs that have been submitted, choose the top 10 by year's end. Then the public will be able to vote online for one of the 10 new designs. The choices also will include one of three former flag designs, including this current state flag. So if someone says, "I like the flag the way it is," they can vote to keep it. The results will be reported to the General Assembly by April 1st. Then lawmakers can vote for a change or not. And the current state flag has not had a major redesign since 1915. So people may argue, well, it's time to update it. But others may argue, well, it's been good enough for more than 100 years. Let's not change.
Well, we'll follow that closely as well. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Shirley Wheeler and Patrick Finkston. He's with WMAY Radio and also author of the Illinois Political Newsletter. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.